now that we're actually recording and getting into this, like, I guess, what are you doing on social media for your marketing?
Literally Facebook and Instagram. I have my personal pages, but I don't really do much with them. It's all just to diversify wellness and therapy. I don't think there's too many businesses with names similar to that I could find in Florida. So if you just type in diversify wellness and therapy, it should pop up. And I try to put out valuable content that's related to the things that I really enjoy about therapy and life coaching. So, how to decrease burnout in motherhood and like stress reduction and coping skills and all of that mixed in with a little bit of sarcasm and humor. I like to say that my page is PG-13 because I do curse every once in a while. So just as a,
That's fair. So are you, I mean, you're obviously a mom of three, or is your page and, slash your business, are you predominantly aimed at moms or parents or families or kids? What do you do?
So I call myself a trauma therapist and like a motherhood empowerment coach. So I function in two capacities. Trauma therapist, I think, is like a really broad term. Most people coming out of school call themselves trauma informed. I work primarily with people struggling with depression, anxiety, and people who are struggling with PTSD or complex PTSD. And I help them utilizing a treatment called EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It's a great word soup. And IFS. But that's not as important, I guess, as, I work with depression, anxiety, and PTSD clinically. And then through life coaching, I work with moms to reduce burnout, have stress reduction, and live more like fulfilling present lives.
Awesome. So you said life coaching in there, and I want to at least highlight that, like, I've seen the term life coach thrown around pretty loosely through, like, I'm a life coach, and to each their own, get after it. But you actually have certifications and education in this, correct?
So it's interesting. You're correct. Anyone can be a life coach, but not anyone can be a therapist. So I have my master's degree in clinical social work. I'm in my second year of supervision for LCSW. So I do have a beautiful supervisor. She's great. So the difference is, technically speaking, therapy meets a medical necessity, right? If you are having clinically diagnosable anxiety or depression or clinically diagnosable PTSD, I reserve life coaching for helping people who don't meet that medical necessity, but are still wanting something more. So, yes, anybody can call themselves a life coach. It is an unregulated field. Therapy is wholly regulated. So, yeah.
All the fun loopholes to jump through. No, I thought that was an important distinction to make, because the term life coach is thrown around so much, and like you said, it's unregulated. You don't really know what you're getting, but I did want to highlight, because I know you do have some education in the field and you do work in a regulated field that actually says, like, hey, you've done the background work to be able to, I don't know, be a, I don't know if better life coach is the right verbiage for it, but it's also not just like, oh, I'm just a person that decided I'm gonna be a life coach and take people's money. It's kind of like guru. It's like, I'm the blah 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 guru. I'm like, that's that I get it all the time in real estate. I'm the guru in this. I'm like, great, have fun.
Cool. Yeah, I would say I have the foundation, right? Like I have the formal education and training, and I've always found myself working with families. My first job out of college was as a family advocate in a domestic violence shelter, and then I was a legal advocate. And then I worked in community mental health, with teenagers and their families coming out of like residential placements or kiddos like at risk for ending up in some sort of residential care or legal system. So I'd say I have like a clinical basis. And the reason for the life coaching is just some people don't meet that medical necessity. Like you don't have diagnosable like generalized anxiety disorder or major depression disorder, but you still have struggles. We all have our struggles. And I I feel so passionately about the motherhood because I'm in it. I'm like in the throes of motherhood with three stair step children. So I know what it took for me to overcome some struggles and get to a place of contentment and like leaning in and being present. It was clinical in background, right? But like not medical diagnosing. So I kind of want to take that experience and help other women in that field. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I also want to bring up, because you've brought it up now a couple times, PTSD. And I didn't know this. I don't know if it was you that told me this, actually. But I think a lot of people's mind, when they hear PTSD, goes to military soldiers. I was prior military, so that's where my mind always went. Hang on a second. I got vacuuming going on. Sorry. The joys of working at home. You know, my mind always went to military vets coming back from deployments, all that kind of stuff. But I'm assuming you work with all facets of PTSD. Someone told me, and again, this might have been you, but that the most common form of PTSD is actually from car accidents, which...
So that wasn't me, but that would make sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get it down. I'll try and figure it out. But yeah, you know, that kind of like opened my eyes to, obviously, it's military / first responders who are going to see a lot of it, because... Just like someone was in a car accident, they're going to have PTSD from that. Well, the first responders are the ones showing up to that and seeing all the carnage and the stuff. So they're going to have it too. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure through things like domestic abuse, you're going to have it through, I mean, just any traumatic experience you have in life, whether it's car accident or just a fire at your house, you know, something like that.
I think it opens a conversation up to what trauma actually is and what that looks like. And, you know, the events that you're talking about are kind of these one time, or can be these one time really big events. It used to be called like big T trauma, but there's also what we call little T traumas. And it could be, you were absolutely humiliated in fourth grade if you got your period in class, right? And like everyone saw it and you had to walk the shame. You know, walk of shame down to the nurse's office. Like that can also be traumatic. Or, you know, adverse childhood experiences, ACEs and ACE score. These are things that can be considered traumatic, which is like food insecurity at home, a neglectful absent parent, a parent experiencing incarceration, child abuse and neglect, sexual abuse. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into trauma that can be chronic and persistent over time that aren't necessarily these big one-time violent events. Trauma is anything that the brain is unable to process and take from a visceral event that elicits this bodily response into narrative format, right? It kind of gets stuck, which is why we end up with triggers later on in life.
Right. It's such a subjective experience, and it's something that I think a lot of times, I don't know, you probably could speak to this better, but from what I see, it's like, oh, well, I had a fine childhood. I don't have trauma. And it's like, just because you didn't grow up, you know, to a single parent who worked three jobs and were in gangs and exposed to like what you would consider significant trauma from movies and all that kind of stuff, like that doesn't mean that there wasn't trauma in your life. It just means A, it might have looked different, and B, the outlet is probably going to look different. Someone that is exposed to gang violence is probably going to have triggers affiliated with that. You know, again, that would be my assumption. You're the professional, but I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot, is like, oh, well, my childhood was fine. It's like, was it? I mean, you said it, right? Like, did you have a parent there all the time? Or, you know, did you have an absentee parent who prioritized everything over you? That's very interesting.
Yeah. I think that, again, it opens the conversation to the language that we use. Some people say trauma. Other people just say hard things. Other people just say, yeah, it made me resilient. You know, there can also be kind of this negative connotation with using the word trauma. Like if you were to say, I've been through trauma. Right. Sometimes that doesn't sit well with people. So I think that it's kind of finding that common ground and that connection piece, because we all do experience trauma. It is part of the human condition. We all experience it. It's kind of just what we do with it and how we handle it or don't handle it that can be really impactful to us.
Right. So do you see people in a one-on-one basis, or is that like group settings, all of the above? How does that work?
So as it stands currently, I am one-on-one. All of my sessions are individual sessions. On occasion, I do family sessions. However, on a telehealth basis, there can be some moving pieces with it all being virtual. I do have plans, though, to set up some group workshops here in the next couple of months. There's one that I'd like to do, and I'm kind of figuring out the stack for that right now, like what it's going to look like with parenting. So parenting past trauma, basically how we don't make our crap our own kids' crap, you know, and like where we want things to stop.
Yeah.
So that workshop hopefully is coming up after the new year. It'll still be virtual right now. And then another thing that I'm doing is for the life coaching, and that would be another group setting with women and empowering women for motherhood or through motherhood.
Awesome. So I'm picking up everything you do right now is virtual. You don't have any brick and mortar or any in person.
Nope, that doesn't really jive right now with my life and my 6'3" and 1 year old. So COVID really exposed how much we can do in this field, in this process, like virtually. So it works really well. I don't really have plans to do brick and mortar anytime soon. If there was a huge outcry for it, you know, I would adapt if need be, but right now it's working pretty well.
Nice. So will the group sessions be the same thing? They'll all be virtual and it'll be just a group chat where you can turn off your camera if you want, or are you trying to do that in person?
So the life coaching will definitely be virtual because I can't guarantee that everyone will be here local. I am working with another consulting firm or collaborating with them about the parenting past trauma. That's not 100% of whether or not it'll be like fully virtual. There's just some logistics and kind of figuring out where it would be if it would be in person. But for now, it's virtual until we figure something else out.
Gotcha. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into this? I was going to say earlier when you said that you started it right out of college, that when you were a kid, you probably didn't want to do this. But then you're like, in college, there I was. And, you know, 18, 19-year-olds are basically children. So what led you into this?
So I didn't do well in anatomy in college. I did pass and I got a C minus, but that's not very good for medical school. I always knew that I wanted to help people. My mother is a nurse practitioner. My stepdad's a doctor. My dad was in residential like plumbing for a while. So in some capacity, my family has always helped others. I thought that was medical. Until I got to college, I changed my major a couple of times and fell into bachelor's of social work. Yeah, I got my BSW, moved down here to Florida to be with my husband, who was voluntold to come down here, and took a break for a few years. Got out of the field. I wanted to do more than case management, but wasn't ready to go back to graduate school. And then took the plunge into graduate school, and here we are, still doing clinical work.
Nice. And I mean, you're expanding it, so I'm assuming you're enjoying it.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, I really enjoy what I do. One of the perks of being the owner of the business is I can kind of curtail who I see and who I don't, to make sure that I'm providing the best service possible, right? So that I don't get burnt out. So right now, you know, I'm limiting my hours to 2 or 3 days a week and making sure I space everyone out to reduce that burnout.
Yeah. So that's always a good idea. I'm very familiar with burnout being in the industry I'm in because people call me at like 7 at night. I want to see this house. I'm like, that's awesome. I'm really excited to do that. It's definitely a juggling act. Yeah. With the, and I don't know if you can answer this from the therapist side. Obviously, I know you're regulated on what you can and can't say. So we'll say maybe from the life coaching side, or if you can answer as a therapist on here, then, you know, by all means. But I guess what might be some signs for someone who's like, I don't think I have anything, but, you know, Like, you know, how should I, how would I know if I should go see somebody?
Oh, so I do firmly believe that everybody could benefit from a therapist at some point. I've been to therapy. I mean, I advocate, I try to practice what I preach. I don't know if I would view it from the language of what's wrong with me versus is this adaptive for my life? Am I functioning from a place of wellness, right? I know balance can be a very loaded word, but you know, if you feel stuck, if you feel alone, if you feel like you just don't know which way to go, or you're looking to grow. So this may be a little controversial, but I don't think that everyone is ready for therapy. I think for therapy to be effective, you have to have a good relationship with your therapist, but you also have to be willing to work, because it's not all rainbows and sunshine. So if you are open to feedback and open to growing and learning more adaptive ways, right, to live your life, then go for it.
Okay. So if someone either doesn't know, or they're not ready to make the plunge, or they are ready, but they just don't know where to turn, I guess, mm-hmm. what are some general coping mechanisms that you would say are just like, you know, breathe in the morning, drink water. What else you got?
Yeah. So start with the basic daily functions. Are you nourishing your body physically, right? Are you nourishing yourself? Like you said, water, sleep hygiene, and like quality of sleep is massive. It is not just a correlation. It is a causation. If you are not sleeping well and getting good sleep, then you can have a massive decline in your mental health and well-being. And it's bi-directional, right? If your mental health is not doing well, you might not sleep well. That might be a sign to go talk to someone. I also am a huge advocate in meaningful human interactions. So that does not mean who we're tweeting and who we're sending DMs to online, but who we're actually having face-to-face, like real conversations with, because we are meant to have meaningful human interactions and connections as a species. That plays a pivotal role in how we're functioning. So if you're not doing that, that might be something to look into. Everything else, I mean, there's hundreds of coping skills. And it's like, what's going to be helpful for you may not be helpful for another person. But some of those kind of core, are you nourishing your body? Are you nourishing your mind? Are you having those meaningful human interactions? Like, those are pretty consistent. For listen, my kid's banging at the door now.
Nice.
Yeah, I know, right? So some of those would be kind of core questions to ask yourself.
I will say, and I think I might have talked to you about this in the past, but if anyone's, I didn't really care about sleep. I was very much a I'll sleep when I'm dead kind of person. You know, it was just I'm fine. I can operate off of 4 hours. I didn't like to, but I would do it. Mm-hmm. If something came up, and not to say that there was never anything worth doing after 10 at night, but for the most part, after 10 at night, it was like watching a movie, scrolling social media, or going out drinking and stuff like that. Now, meaningful human to human interactions, like some of the best bonding experience I've had with friends was out late at night doing stuff and, you know, having a good time. But so I read this book by Dr. I think it was Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. Super easy read. And the podcast, honestly, it covers, I would say, 80% of the book, and the podcast is just easier, more digestible, and it's free, which is awesome. But it changed my entire perspective on sleep. And then when I fixed my sleep and got a really good sleep hygiene pattern going, I saw other marked improvements in my life just from my diet, my, you know, struggle with weight, my ability to cope with stress, my relationship with my family, like all my markers went up, all of them across the board.
Yep.
And I'm much more sensitive now to knowing when I don't get a good night's sleep, which seems like it would kind of be a bad thing. If I sleep 4 hours now, like I'm a zombie, just leave me alone. I'm taking the day off. Like I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
But you know, I look at it as a good thing, because prior to that and having gone off of 4 hours of sleep, I would be out in the world trying to make decisions and trying to do my job on 4 hours of sleep. And knowing now and feeling the effects of it now that I'm actually well rested. I mean, I just can't imagine trying to go out and make, you know, whether it's split second decisions. I was a skydive coach for a while. So like making a life and death decision at 120 miles an hour after you've only slept four hours, probably drank some the night before, is just not a great idea. It definitely, that was one of the biggest things in my life that really helped like start to, I say, fix things, improve.
It's not a luxury. Sleep is not a luxury. It is a biological necessity. I would consider myself a holistic therapist because what we've learned is that it all plays, it's all connected, right? Like we're not machines. So before I would go into some deep diving, you know, really complex intervention, we as in like the client and I, if they're on board with it, are going to look at what are your sleep patterns, right? Like what are your eating patterns? Are you getting enough exercise? Because that is also, it's not a correlation, it's a causation. We are meant to move our bodies. Also, emotions have like physical energy behind them. So to process, that can also look like moving your body. Biped movements, right? Like getting out and walking, or if you're capable, or being in the sun, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So before I would go into the kind of the deep diving processing and childhood wounds and everything like that, some of the crisis stabilization looks like doing the essential functions of what human beings are meant to do. And I think that piece, people are surprised. I can't, more than once people have been surprised. They're like, you're a mental health therapist. I'm like, yeah, it's all impacts it.
So. Go for a walk, get out in the sun. Yep. Get some sleep.
Yep.
Awesome. So it drives me nuts when people are like, hey, here's a good idea, but then don't provide any resources. So I'm not saying you need to like make a list. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so it's kind of like my way of getting information. I really like Andrew Huberman. Joe Rogan has a bunch of good ones. That's where I heard the Matthew Walker podcast. Andrew Huberman's been on there. There's been a bunch of good ones about like general health and fitness. Dr. Rhonda Patrick has a podcast, I think, and she has a really good one about health and the body. Do you have any others that you would recommend if someone's looking just like surface level
for or podcasts?
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Books, podcasts, TV shows, documentaries, don't
care. There's one podcast that is really great for information on anxiety. It's called Do the Work. It's a lot about personal relationships, like intimate relationships, how to foster those relationships. It also talks about anxiety a lot. So yeah, there's one on Spotify called Do the Work. The other one is called The One Inside. And it is, I don't remember the woman's name. I listened to it. But it's super helpful because it is a podcast specifically related to, it's called IFS, Internal Family System, and all of the different ways that it can be. Yeah, here, buddy. Look at this modern day parenting. See, no judgment. We're in a non-judgment zone. Just stare at the bright lights.
Yeah, buddy.
But the other one, it's called The One Inside. And I think that those are both super helpful. As it relates to kind of a non-judgmental way to look at the way that we've organized our lives and the systems in our lives and like how we can make them more adaptive, kind of like insight-based work. So I like those two podcasts.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Awesome. I know, actually I have it right here. I'm still reading it very slowly, but your book, Why Gender Matters. I'm not super far into it. I just haven't committed a bunch of time to it, but I've kind of like slowly been digesting it. And if you're a parent and you have a kid, boy or girl, I think even more importantly, boy and girl, that will help. I mean, that helped me just like, oh my gosh, this all makes so much sense. Or me being, you know, I have a daughter, I have a 9-year-old daughter. So it helps me look into kind of, look at life through my daughter's eyes a little bit more in a way that I don't know that I can without a resource like that.
Yeah. Dr. Leonard Sachs is, I love his research. He's great. That's the author of that book, Dr. Leonard Zach. Another guy who I've read most of his books, but not all of them. He's kind of like one of the, he's a very influential person in neuropsychology, is Dr. Dan Siegel. And he has a whole book series about brain-based parenting, right? Like different ways to interact and understand your children. He wrote the book, like The Whole-Brained Child, Mindsight. No Drama Discipline. He's a really good author. And there's practical application in there. Now, again, I love to work with parents. There is no like magic bullet that is just going to make it like easy peasy. It is the hardest thing I have ever endeavored to do. But I think some of these books that are not just Instagram curated material where they're like, oh, it's easy here, look, you know, if their real life experiences from these people who also have a background in neuroscience or in clinical therapy, you know, who can pull on the research and the evidence, it's been super helpful for me. So Dr. Dan Siegel is another one that I would strongly recommend if parents are looking for different ways to interact with their kids.
Well, that is definitely good to know, because like I said, I've been to things before and people are like, oh, just do this. And you're like, cool. Where should I go? Who do you recommend? And there's never, you know, any follow-up on that. So I always like to try and make sure that, you know, if you as a professional have those recommendations, that we get them out there. I know you got to run relatively soon, and your boy looks like he's giving you a hard time. So I'll kind of wrap up here, but
normal.
I did want to cover, I know you said that you moved down here because your husband PCS down here. Where were you originally from?
I'm originally from Virginia. So, but he was in Indiana. North Carolina. No, Virginia. Sorry.
Virginia.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm originally from Virginia. Yep. I'm a mountain girl. And he was in North Carolina at the time. So we got down here in 2017, and we'll be retiring out here unless something drastically changes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. What do you think?
Yeah. So what's the future plan look like for, we'll say specifically business? Obviously you got one retirement on the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Gordy, my husband he always says, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, because he's been in the military since he was 18. So I think we have another year or so. Yeah, we have a year or so to kind of figure that piece out. We don't have any plans on leaving, and I feel pretty committed to my business. So for me, I just want to continue to grow a good client list, you know, and help as many people as possible. I'm also a huge fan of sustainability. So I'm working on a book. So I got a couple things going. I'm working on writing a book. For moms specifically. Yeah. And then trying to do some more of these like workshops and education based things that people can have access to. So, yeah, so that you don't have to schedule the one.
Very cool. Often. Yeah. You got a resource you can kind of fall back on when you're not available.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. And then I guess my last question for you before I let you go is, you know, I try and ask everyone, if someone was coming down to visit, coming down to move, what are your favorite things about the Emerald Coast? What do you recommend they go do while they're here?
Absolutely love Grayton Beach, Grayton State Park. If you have small kids, I like that lake on the backside. So if you're petrified of the water or the waves or the surf, you can put them on the backside. Yeah. Also, the alligators are always fun. That's a cool, fun kid thing to do with like Fuddruckers down in Destin, and Crab Island. I'm sure everybody and their mother's brother tells you about Crab Island. You know, everything I do at this stage of my life is just really centered around families, because we have a family. So we just usually enjoy Spectre Island, especially if Crab Island is full, like, and partying it up, you know, in the summertime. You go 20 minutes, you know, down the channel, you be at Spectre Island. It's super calm. The kids can still play on the beaches, you know, and have a good time.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I know, I know I need to get your husband on the podcast to help him figure out what he wants to do when he grows up. We talked a little bit about it for his fishing adventures. So I'd love to have him on. Thanks very much for joining me. If anyone is looking to try and find you, I'll post a link to your website on the description, but how can they search for you?
So if you just type in Diversified Wellness and Therapy, we have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram page. I do, as a caveat, disclaimer, like I can't provide any formal like therapy or advice on those pages. But my actual webpage to book a consultation or schedule a full appointment, they are embedded on all of those advertising sites. So you can just go on, and I do provide complimentary consultations, 15 to 20 minutes for you to pop in and say hello and, you know, ask me any questions and see if we can, you know, help.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me. It was great talking with you, and I need to get you your book back once I finish reading it, but we'll figure out something soon. We'll get together.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you so much.